Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
As sports keeps coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, BetOnline.ag. Major League Baseball's back, and BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right. Visit BetOnline.ag today to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. And don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back to sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
You are listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. For more on your Pelicans, go to iTunes, search The Bird Calls, and subscribe today. Another episode of the Bird Calls podcast. I'm your host and contributor to thebirdrights.com and Bleacher Report, Preston Ellis. Today, we're putting a bow on the bubble and we're moving toward what could be a franchise shifting offseason for what feels like the third year in a row. To help us, we've got editor-in-chief to thebirdrights.com, the man who will hold up any podcast to walk his pups, Mr. Ali Cosell. What's up, Rock?
Nothing. The pups got walked, so good news there.
Nice. All right. We got the host to harden the paint. The man who pulls no punches when it comes to small forwards who refuse to shoot, Mr. David Greb. What's up, Rob?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. The long national nightmare has ended.
What do you mean, Kenrich Williams' tenure in New Orleans?
That and this season. So, I'm, you know, it's we can move on now. I can start to process and go through the phases of grief and acceptance.
David, I just got one question for you. You going to be buying any season tickets soon?
What the hell is that? I'm all of a sudden getting emails and phone calls from the Pelicans asking me to buy season tickets. I've not bought a ticket in 5 years. I have media passes. I don't go to games. That's their way of saying. You're not getting a pass next season yet.
All right, you guys just heard the Prince of the Protocol, as Ali dubbed him, the man who makes money from drawing birds, Mr. Kevin Berrios. What's up, brah?
Nothing much. Doing some editing this morning, trying to get some birds ready to be sold with prints. So I think I got a print-worthy pick that I'm happy with. So I'm going to go test those out, and then I'll let y'all know about those when I'm happy with the quality.
And we've got a special guest to the podcast. I think he might be a first-time guest, Mr. Ryan Hebert. What's going on, man?
Hey, Preston. What's up?
Dude, you sound amazing. What kind of microphone are you using?
It's a Fifine.
Before we continue, I got to say, when I got into the group chat, when I signed in, Ryan, I just saw Ryan's face because he's the only one that was on video. And then in that voice, that deep voice, I heard him say, I don't have grandparents. That was it. I thought I was like listening to the origin story of a Marvel character for a minute.
Funny, people don't know this about Ryan, but that's how he always introduces himself, as I don't have grandparents. Ryan, how are you, man?
Exactly.
Who would you say is more valuable right now, the Pelicans franchise or Kevin Berrios's pencil drawings of Pelicans?
Birds. The drawings.
No, man, we've got 8 games in the bubble. The Pelicans were 8th in defensive rating in 36 games heading into this. And then, of course, 49 points to the Clippers, to the Sacramento Kings in the first quarter against the Clippers. They gave up a franchise record 25 3-pointers. What is your takeaway? You're watching these games. You're watching the Pelicans fall flat on their face. What happened, man? And what was your reaction to it?
Man, honestly, I kind of expected it after the Utah game, just because I kept looking at it. I was like, I have 6 quality wins all year. I had to remind myself they weren't a good team ever.
Yeah.
Is that it? Are you going to leave us with that, Ryan?
They're not a good team yet. They have a ways to go.
I mean, he is
You're talking to a man who has no grandparents, man. He's, you
know, he's going to keep it real. He's going to be strunt. And that's exactly what I put in the game summary for last night, is that they weren't a good team. And we were fooling ourselves, and we tried to make them a good team, and that's just not who they were.
Yeah, it was easy to lift them up into some other stratosphere, right? When you start off 6-22, have a 13-game losing streak, and all of a sudden you're actually winning a couple games a week, it does change your perspective a little bit.
Yeah, if nothing else, you might not necessarily expect them to beat the Utahs and the Los Angeles Clippers, but the Sacramento Kings, the San Antonio Spurs, you would at least expect a little bit more effort, a bit more of a fight in those instances. Ryan, did it feel like to you the Pelicans were just overwhelmed with their play on the court? Did it feel like they were detached from giving the effort that we had seen over the last 36 games? Why did it feel like these guys just simply didn't have it?
I don't know, but if I can tell you're not trying through a TV screen, I'm not very happy with it. Like,
short and to the point.
I don't know what was going on. Yeah, sorry. Like, I don't know what was going on with them, but they tried maybe like two games.
And that's not bad. 2 out of 8, I'll take that every time. 25% of the time, if 25% of the time you work every time, as Paul Rudd would say. Let's talk Alvin Gentry, head coach. Obviously, there's a lot of rumor mill going on. David Aldridge of The Athletic, Adrian Wojnarowski even got into it and was suggesting some guys the Pelicans might be targeting. I think he threw out Ty Lue and Jason Kidd. We'll go ahead and we'll start with Ali, and we'll go clockwise. Ali, do you think Alvin Gentry's tenure in New Orleans is done?
Yeah, it wasn't a secret, although many of us didn't talk about it for much of the season. There had been rumors that he was sitting on a hot seat because David Griffin was going to move on from him at some point and some point soon. You know, I know he wasn't happy with their 1-6, 1-7 start, whatever that was, where they dropped a couple of close games, and especially in the clutch time. They just didn't come through. And, of course, that 13-game losing streak, right? Everybody was upset about that. It wasn't just, you know, one or two people. Pretty much I'd heard certain players were, you know, I mean, nobody signed up for that. And, of course, Griff as well. You know, you've got to, even though you weren't expected to make noise, get in the playoffs, you still had hoped the team would have never looked as bad as they did or gone on such a prolonged slump basically such a prolonged slump. So ever since that time, you know, it's just been on and off. And, you know, with the way they finished, with how, you know, this team just never kind of gelled, even though they had some decent performances. I just think that this evaluation season was not just for the players, but for Alvin. People, I think, tend to forget that, even though he was extended last offseason, right? Or is actually, that's incorrect. The team picked up his option. So I still think they'll probably move on from him. There's just been enough clamor. And look, David Griffin's not a guy to basically give you additional leeway. No, once he makes up his mind, he goes through with it. You know, I don't think we're going to have any kind of Dell Demps situation where, you know, somebody keeps getting added a year, or hey, maybe we'll just write this off on injuries or whatever. I just feel like Griff is going to be making a decision on Alvin and announcing it soon, you know, whether it's today, tomorrow, maybe Monday, who knows. But I think, yeah, Alvin's definitely done.
Kevin, it's definitely been an up and down roller coaster over the 5 years the Pelicans have had Alvin Gentry, with just one playoff appearance in those five seasons. And a lot of people have been shitting on his performance and his tenure there, and rightfully so. We haven't won nearly as much as we needed to with superstars like Anthony Davis and Zion and Brandon Ingram, et cetera. But with that being said, he's really represented the organization well, I feel. He seems like a really nice guy by all accounts. He handles the media very well. Just give us 2 minutes and tell us why maybe Alvin Gentry got a raw deal in his 5 years so we can kind of send him off with a bow and just be done with it in a positive light.
Well, I would start off by saying I disagree a little bit with what Ali said, because he said that there shouldn't have been an expectation this year. You know, it was more of an evaluation year for him when the president came out and basically said this was a year we expect to be a winning team. So I think that was an unfair expectation put upon him by management this year, because you had such a high roster turnover. You had so many young players coming in. You're in the West, obviously. So I felt like that expectation was levied upon him from the very start, that this was a winning team. This is a team that was going to beat people's asses, that whole, you know, pro wrestling manager thing that David Griffin threw out there. So the expectation was high this year, and that was a little bit unfair to Alvin Gentry. It should be, you know, I think we can win games, but we got a lot of development to do and build a culture, and all of those things should have been more of the talking point than, you know, saying that we expect to beat people up. And then, of course, you know, he dealt with injuries, he dealt with trade demands, he dealt with the death of a player. So there was a lot of stuff that he dealt with. And, you know, during the Anthony Davis trade demands, he was thrown in front of the camera and was the face of that while Dell sat in his office, which, you know, I've defended Dell a bit throughout the his tenure, too. I think he's made some good decisions. He's made some bad decisions. He was also saddled with the same injuries that those two coaches that he worked with were saddled with. So you got, if you're going to give the coaches a pass, you got to give him a little bit of a pass too. But I thought that was that wasn't such a good look to make Alvin take the brunt of all of that stuff. So yeah, he's definitely dealt with a lot of stuff. But at the end of the day, as we were talking before we started recording, when Monty got fired and Ollie sent out roundtable questions and said, who do you think the Pelicans should hire? I answered anyone but Alvin Gentry. And he's basically on the court lived up to what I expected of him. He's exceeded slightly with that winning season that we had once he had a roster that more fit with what he wanted to do. But at the end of the day, I just don't think he has the intangibles to be a head coach in the league. I don't think he has the game management skills to be a head coach in the league. I think he's a brilliant offensive coordinator. And that's what he needs to be. And sure, you could say he had a raw deal, but he's always been the wrong man for this job.
Well, yeah, I just want to follow up. And it's not to me an argument. It's just my thing is, A, Alvin was promised something that he was never given when he arrived. He was told he would be given a veteran team and that they were going to adapt that roster to the style of play he wanted. So he was saddled with guys who did not fit that mold. And, again, the injuries, you talk about how many lineups this team has had over the last 5 years. You talk about, I think, a dysfunctional relationship between him and Dell Demps before. I think David Griffin deserves blame for the things that have happened this season as well, as far as not giving reinforcements in the front court, not going out and finding a perimeter defender when you saw that was your team's greatest area of need defensively. I think that those were huge mistakes that hindered him. I think the way that they handled Zion Williamson in particular, and having the medical staff be the final, once they've made that decision and you've taken his play out of the coach's hands, you change those dynamics as well. So I think there's a lot of blame to spread around. But to me, the ultimate thing is not that Alvin is a failure as a coach. I don't think that that's the case. I think, you know, and in the NBA, you have guys like Dick Motta who lost tons of games. You have guys like Bill Fitch who won a championship with the Celtics but is the losingest coach of all time in the NBA. There are coaches who just have to have the right situation. And for Alvin, he needed a group of veterans that were mature and aggressive. He never got that. That's not who this team is. That's not the personalities it's ever been made up of. And ultimately that these 5 years are a failure. You get one playoff appearance in 5 years, that's a failure.
Poor Solomon Hill and Dante Cunningham, for you to just rake them through the mud like that. Ryan, finish
the corner boys.
The corner boys. Ryan, give us your finishing thoughts on Alvin Gentry and his five-year obviously, it's not guaranteed that he's out, but that's what we're all assuming. If he is, in fact, out, Ryan, what were some of your takeaways of his five-year tenure?
As a guy, but I think it is time to go. But his tenure here was so up and down. What was that stat? He had like all those injuries, as everything said, death of a player, all that crap, but like still you're not winning. I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, he had plenty of opportunities over those 5 years. Regardless of the injuries, you can't make too many excuses when you're getting, you know, 70 to 80 games out of Jrue Holiday, Anthony Davis. Sorry, were you adding on to that?
Yeah, I was just saying, like, you watch Anthony Davis now, and I just don't get how you don't win with that guy.
LeBron helps.
Yeah.
A huge deal. The fact that Anthony doesn't have to be the number one really helps.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can throw DeMarcus Cousins in there, the untimely injury that has, by all accounts, pretty much derailed his career. I'm sure he'll get another shot with a veteran deal, maybe a mid-level.
That one is the worst what if, though, because Ali and I know that was doomed. It was doomed from the start. They might be friends off the court, but they hated all three of those guys. Rondo, Boogie, and AD were going to tear each other apart.
AD was the guy that ran out of the room as quick as possible.
Yes, right? He was the kid.
It was Boogie and Rondo were the guys butting heads.
Yeah, AD's the one caught between two parents and not knowing which one to side with. You know, he's trying to figure out who gets Christmas and who gets Thanksgiving. And then
they all went to the Lakers on a joint Christmas.
Literally, Rondo and Cousins almost came to blows with weapons in the locker room. Like, it's that real. That team was not going to make it. It wasn't. Rondo was so happy when DeMarcus, not that he got hurt, but that he was no longer part of the rotation, because he said it. We can now play defense. And that's coming from Rondo.
Yeah.
That they can now play defense.
He hasn't played defense in 5 years.
But how much better was he defensively once DeMarcus was gone, though?
Yeah.
Isn't it sad that was our most successful season? All right. Let's get some order in here. Go ahead, Kim.
The other thing with that team is that, you know, it's funny now watching how much AD seems to enjoy being in the shadows of LeBron James, because, you know, you saw his frustration in the locker room with DeMarcus Cousins when anytime he would get the shine, you know, when the reporters would go talk to him, that really upset Anthony Davis. So there's like this narrative out there that Anthony Davis wanted to leave because we lost DeMarcus Cousins and that was his friend. And that's just simply not true. So that needs to be said outside of just the friction between Rondo and Cousins. Anthony Davis wasn't happy with the attention that DeMarcus Cousins got from the media while he was here.
The worst thing was that AD didn't like the fact that DeMarcus actually had a presence on the court as a leader, taking, you know, three, four, five shots in the last 3 minutes of a close game. That's what really set AD off. I mean, I think you remember that, right, David? But there was one next game of practice, and we talked to AD, and he flat out, that's the first time I ever actually heard him say and basically point out that that's never going to happen again, to where he was basically pointing out and admitting a disharmony within the locker room with a certain player. It's the only time it's ever happened. And who did it happen with? DeMarcus. So people need to remember that.
Oh, that was the sneak out times. That's when Drew or AD would literally go behind the walls to avoid talking to us on certain nights. And you had to start pinning them off to say, no, you start asking him questions and you start asking him questions and we'll just come together in the middle, guys. Because they were doing that on a regular basis. That team was not happy. And everybody could point to that January streak. And I know we're getting kind of off track, but everybody points to that January streak. And I said, go again. Go look at those opponents. That was not murderer's row. And the one good win you had was over Houston. I don't even count that Boston win. But you get if Nico Mirotic doesn't get a substantial role on that team, they don't make the playoffs, and they can only get in by winning 5 games straight at the end of the season. They've just come off of what, a four-game losing streak, and they had to win 5 straight to get it to eke in.
The deep dive into the 2017-18 season you all requested.
2 years too late.
Yes.
Let's go. Let's start with Ali, and we'll work around the horn again. A lot of questions about who the Pelicans are potentially going to be looking at. Obviously, we've got the usual suspects: Ty Lue, Jason Kidd, Kenny Atkinson, Vanderpool, among others. Ali, forget about names. What style of coach do you think this young Pelicans roster really needs to develop and take the next step?
The number one thing they need is greater discipline, because as we saw all season, those turnovers never got curbed. These players were still making silly mistakes. The defense never came together. you saw the lack of focus, and inexplicably in some games to where, you know, Lonzo or whoever is making these lazy passes. And when I talk about lazy passes, they're just flipping the ball to a teammate, not aware that there's a defender standing right there coming in for the steal. So there was a lot of maddening play that never went away. So I feel that's a direct result from having three guys, 22 or younger, in the starting lineup. And in general, it's a younger group especially by NBA standards. So they just needed to basically be disciplined, stronger, harder, better, whatever. And under an Alvin Gentry-led team, that's never going to happen. I think Alvin can win in this league. I think you give him those vets, as David just went into. And we've seen examples of it in the past, that his style will produce winning basketball for the right mix of players. But this isn't it. You know, Lonzo needed to be reeled in and honed a lot better. Brandon Ingram, you know, defensively, where were people all over him about not doing his job on that end? Because he was a much better defender in L.A. I've had a lot of Laker fans reach out to me and point that out. And when I've looked at tape and all that, they're right. Because I do remember instances. For instance, Griffin, before, you know, he even became the general manager of the Pelicans, or I should say executive vice president, sorry, to be correct, because that drives people crazy, is he pointed out how Ingram could guard, like, even point guards, commenting on specifically when he defended Kyrie Irving while stayed in front of him. So we never saw that BI all year. And, of course, Zion. I mean, it's well documented by now because of his bubble play, but he's been a terrible defender all season. Nobody talked about it but us during those 19 games. So that's accountability, and there was none for all those mistakes. And so I just want to see a coach brought in, like I said, that can handle people. So, yeah, I know you don't want names, but, you know, people like Atkinson come to mind, Fizdale, Jerry Stackhouse. Like, for instance, I'll talk about Fizdale since most people don't know, is the fact that he's got a great history of working with not only great players, molding young players into stars, but also being on superstar teams. So he knows basically what is ahead for this Ingram Zion group. Like, for instance, he started off, I think, in Atlanta, one of his first assistant coaching jobs. And he was given the task of developing Josh Smith. And he flat out said, it was in a podcast on the Knuckleheads. I implore you guys to go check it out this week. Kevin brought it to my attention. But he goes into detail about that, where he's like, I butted heads with Josh Smith a lot. But you know what? If you look at Josh, he was an efficient and incredible asset to any team during his, you know, pretty much his entire time with Atlanta. And you've got to credit Fizdale for that. Also, Fiz was there to see how you bring together a good championship team and fill it around with role players, right? He understands that dynamic where LeBron, Bosh, and Wade came in, and somebody had to basically be the leader, and then you fill out roles from there. So a team needs, like, even a Udonis Haslem, a Shane Battier. So I feel like he would be, you know, have a good eye for and a good sense for filling out a roster with Ingram and Zion, say in a few years' time when we're ready to win. So basically, I just want a guy that's got a little bit of experience to him. But the main thing is the discipline, right? I just feel like I still want to play fast. I still think in this today's NBA, you've got to go with the trends. And that, of course, is making the three ball and pushing the pace, especially when you have the horses like the Pelicans do. But, man, they've got to rein in and basically be told to, you know, just think out there. Think the game better. Execute better. And, of course, give effort all the time.
All right, let's follow that up with Kevin. Ali mentioned this at the end. I can't remember a Pelicans team that didn't play with pace, and I'm bringing up the numbers right now just in terms of who are the fastest teams in the NBA right now, and they're some of the best teams. Milwaukee's number one, Houston's number two. Of course, then you've got Minnesota number three and Washington number five, but it's proven that in today's NBA that pace can win. Do you think that's the style the Pelicans need to continue to implement, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the way the roster's constructed right now, that works. I mean, you're essentially assuming that at some point Zion Williams is going to play a lot of his minutes at the five, so you're going to be a quick team and you're going to want to push and run. Then, you know, as Grubb brings up a lot about Lonzo being one of the he's the fastest player in the league to convert a defensive rebound into a score. So you have players on your roster that fit that mold, and I think that's an important thing to carry forward. I also think my biggest thing that I'm looking for is a guy who demands on-court communication, especially on the defensive end, because we haven't seen that since Chris Paul left. Our guys have never talked, and that's a huge problem. And you see all the great defenses, all the above-average defenses have guys that talk and communicate, let each other know where to be, who to switch on, when not to switch. All that communication just doesn't exist on our team, and we've consistently been a terrible defensive team since Chris Paul left, and I think that's one of the key reasons why. So I definitely want a guy that preaches that.
All right, now Grubb. Obviously, the Pelicans are going to build from the bottom up in terms of draft selections, young players, blue chip caliber guys, 19 to 23. Right now, much of the Pelicans' core is made up of 22-year-olds in Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, 19-year-old in Zion, and they're going to keep adding to that young core. Just how important is it that the Pelicans target somebody who has a proven track record of developing young players?
I think it's a mistake if that's your path, because you're never going to get to where you're trying to go. Like I've used this example a number of times. When we talk about the Toronto Raptors, a small market team, they didn't spend a ton of time developing 8 young players. They developed 2, 3. Fred VanVleet, of course, Pascal Siakam, and Norman Powell is starting to turn into something, and OG Adonobi maybe turning into something. So, but they didn't. You can't do that with 8. You look at the Milwaukee Bucks, and we've talked about them. The only guys remaining from that team that were drafted when Giannis was is Chris Middleton. It's him and Chris Middleton. So a lot of these guys are going to be moved over the next few years. You know, the Nuggets couldn't keep Yusuf Nurkic. They're going to have to make some hard choices. You decide who your core is, and then you start to fill out around it. And that's what the Pelicans need to do first and foremost. Who are your centerpieces? Who are you going to invest in? And then everything else should be around that mission. And if your mission is trying to develop players, then move to the G League, because that shit don't matter. Because the thing to me is, you know, we can talk about pace, but if you go through the top 15 teams in pace, there are just as many bad teams in that group as there are good teams. We can talk about three-point attempts, but there are just as many bad teams in the top 15 as there are good teams. The key to this, we're using these numbers, and we're not talking about basketball players. Find me some fucking professional basketball players who want to compete, who can do more than one thing, who are not one-dimensional, and who are mature enough to come to work every day and build those around your young players. You don't need 9 young players on this roster, because by the time they all mature, a lot of them will be ready to move or be too expensive to keep.
Now, Ryan, we've obviously talked about coaching and how important that is going to be to developing and making a winner out of this group. But we've also talked about how having stable and vocal veterans can also make a world of difference. How important is it to you that the Pelicans go out and, like Chris Connor says, get that, what does he say, badass?
Asshole.
Get that. How important is it, Ryan, to have that asshole in the locker room? Is it just as important as a head coach? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so I think I said this on Twitter, but if you're going to replace the head coach, you have to get something to help in the middle, and you have to get another backup point guard that's a veteran. Because I was even watching DJ Augustine last night. The guy was killing us because they don't know what to do. Like, the defense is bad. You can't, if you want to play with pace, you can't have Derek Favors starting. It just hasn't worked this year. He's broken. And then you need another defender. So, yeah, if you're going to change the coach, you also need to back it up with some roster changes.
All right, let's go ahead and dive into roster changes, Ali. Obviously, the Pelicans have a lot of decisions to make. Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Jrue Holiday are all extension eligible. Brandon Ingram, of course, we expect is going to get re-signed I can't remember what it is, 5 p.m. on October 19th, whenever that threshold reveals itself. But there's also like fringe decisions they need to make on guys like Etuan Moore, Frank Jackson, Jahlil Okafor, Kenrich Williams, among others. What is your ideal offseason, and what moves would you make?
Oh, boy. I mean, first you've got to bring in the coach. So you're not going to be thinking personnel until you've sat down with the new guy and basically mapped out a strategy and, you know, point of attack, what's going to be the focus, what needs to be shored up. Because for each coach, it's a little bit different. Even though we saw the glaring holes this year, they may not be as glaring under a different, you know, basically schemes and an entirely new coaching staff. So until that happens, it's kind of hard to say. But we do know certain things, and I think Ryan touched on it. I mean, I don't think – there were a few that were higher on Derek Favors than us as a collective group this season. We were happy to see the price that the Pelicans paid to get him, and we thought, you know, let's face it, we were getting maybe that Utah Jazz Derek Favors, but we never saw that guy. I mean, I know we've mentioned on the pod a few times, but Grubb and I saw him in the preseason. Me, you know, we started getting worried because he was not moving around like that, you know, Utah guy, that version. So, and he never really improved. I know that he, of course, had to deal with his mom, so he had to leave the team basically for an extended period. So that's going to affect anybody's conditioning. But you know, you can use that excuse only for up to a certain point, because he had now these last 4 months during the shutdown to where you thought, okay, maybe he'll get his body right. He'll look more rested and show some of that old explosion or mobility. Didn't see it. I mean, I know his effort is still there and his IQ is off the charts to where it can make up for a lot of things. And I saw that play, even though some people don't want to give him any credit for it. Go look at some old video to where he's not only defending his man, he's still giving help and getting back to his, you know, main assignment and either boarding him off for a rebound or even, you know, contesting the shot nicely. There was no other Pelicans doing it. So that's why it stands out to me. But that aside, Derek Favors is not a guy you can rely on a winning basketball team for 30 minutes a game over an 82-game season anymore. And that's a big problem, because all of us thought that he could be that guy. They would have his bird rights, so they wouldn't have to worry about spending additional money, like, say, if they have cap space, but I don't think they're going to, or use an exception to bring in somebody else. You know, so you thought Favors had it on lockdown, but now that he's, you know, kind of this concern, now I'm worried on how you proceed with that roster construction. Because I wrote an article, number one thing, without a doubt, is you've got to get a tall defender on the wing. The Pelicans just got butchered alive. So anytime people are talking about how bad the starting lineup looked, look at which of those teams that they did poorly against had that great, you know, 6'6 or taller scorer slash playmaker. It was pretty much against all of them, you know, from the Jazz with Bogdanovich on the wing shooting to, of course, the LeBrons and Giannis's. So that's the number one concern. You've got to get a decent to great defender between Ingram and Zion, because they're just that bad. They need the help. And sorry, Drew can only do so much. He's always going to be way more effective against guys 6'5" or smaller. So his effect is honestly minimal. That's why I never translate to the team's defense. People don't understand that. But usually guards' defense isn't going to be the main proponent of a good defense. Why? Because they can only do so much. They can't, you know, switch 1 through 5, defend the rim, defend the paint, be the last line of defense, right? So,
Oh, God. Those are the screams I used to make when I'd cut myself shaving you know where. But that was before Manscaped. Thanks, Manscaped, for turning my loud shrieks into multiple peaks. Look, who here doesn't get nervous about grooming their man parts? And that's why Manscaped created the Lawnmower 3.0, beautifully designed to reduce those painful nicks and tugs. The Manscaped engineering team obsesses over technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your family jewels. So many people have written in stories about how the Lawnmower 3.0 has changed their lives. They even included pics so I could see the smoothness for myself. And they aren't kidding. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code ARMCHAIR at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. As sports keeps coming back, so does your chance to bet on them with our exclusive wagering partner, betonline.ag. Major League Baseball's back, and BetOnline has all the odds, futures, and props for you to bet on. Also, tune in as Floyd Money Mayweather joins the BetOnline team in a new segment called The Ice is Right. Visit betonline.ag today to check out all the odds and up-to-date sports news. And don't forget to sign up and take advantage of all the welcome back to sports bonuses. BetOnline, your online wagering experts.
Ali, if I may, I would say this. Drew is like Darrell Revis. You put him out there on an island and he can stop anybody. But Drew is not a great team defender. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is not able to cover for others' mistakes in that regard.
You need an anchor. Down, yeah, you need a star anchor.
Right, and that's the thing. Is like, you need somebody who can switch the 2 to 3 immediately and get back into the paint once somebody gets past Lonzo or something like that. And they don't have that. And like you said, you need that physical presence. Because Jackson Hayes plays, 25 minutes last night? Gets 4 boards? So it's like
you see him shooting layups, how he was contorting his body around contact on
layups. Yeah, he doesn't want contact. Right. He doesn't want it. So you have nobody on the roster. Okafor, at the very least, offensively is physical, but you're still trying to get him to understand how to rebound properly. Maybe he can be a Robin Lopez-type presence, as whereas, just like you say, just box out and allow your teammates to grab rebounds. But if Zion isn't boxing out and grabbing those rebounds, if you're not getting Ingram to box out and grab those rebounds, because he boxed out horribly in the bubble.
Yes.
Horribly. So if you're not getting those basic things, I mean, those are the things that allow you to give up 120 points 30 times.
Yeah.
All right, let's bounce around to Kevin. Obviously, we've covered a lot of ground in terms of offseason plans. So let's narrow down the spectrum and just focus on Drew Holiday for a moment, Kevin. I know I've asked you this in the past, and you're not going to deal him just to deal him. You're going to want to look for a deal that improves your team long term. But with that being said, it's going to cost a lot to keep him. You don't want that hanging over the Pelicans all year long. Like we mentioned, you've got a lot of young players. You're going to have a new coach. Distractions are not something that the Pelicans need right now. Just how important is it that the Pelicans either come to terms with Drew Holiday this summer or do start finding a deal that's worthwhile?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I still don't know the answer to what to do with Drew Holiday. I don't think he's the kind of guy that's going to be a distraction in the locker room. So I don't think you have to worry about it as much as you would with other players. He just doesn't have that personality. But, you know, if you were to deal him, I think you could fill a lot of holes. Now, what does that do to your defense? You know, but like Grubb said, he doesn't fix team defense. He'll shut down a scorer. So if you can fix team defense by moving him and fill other holes and provide other things that you also need, like a bigger guard or, you know, another ball handler, a center, a stretch four, whatever that is. You fill multiple holes, then maybe it's the move to make. Also, you know, maybe moving on completely from the old era is a good move for this team. I don't know. But I do still see value in Drew. I just think the expectation of what Drew is needs to change for everybody involved. And you can't rely on him as an offensive player. You have to know that he is your defensive stopper that can get you buckets sometimes, but you can't count on those buckets because he's so wildly inconsistent offensively that you have to have an offense built that doesn't dictate the need for him to get you 15, 20 points a game because he can't do that on a consistent basis. But as far as the dealing him in the locker room stuff, I don't think that's really an issue when you're talking about Drew Holiday just because of the kind of person that he is.
All right, Ryan, let's get you to close this one out. You mentioned that Derek Favors is breaking down. Ali reiterated that you can't really expect over 82 games for him to give you 30 minutes a night. So, Ryan, I need you to plug that hole for us. The Pelicans have the mid-level exception available to them. Of course, they have endless assets they could use in any trade. Is there a certain player or even a certain type of player that you're targeting to help fill that gap and anchor the defense?
Yes, but that type of player is super rare. You're not going to find like a Brook Lopez somewhere. So they need to I don't know. Is Aaron Baines that guy? He's going to cost money. Money is going to be a huge issue this offseason with the COVID. We might lose, what, $10 million in cap? So it's almost impossible to predict here. And I'm fine with Favors coming back, but I don't want him to start, if that makes sense.
No, that makes absolute sense. I'm not sure that he would want that. I know there are certain teams like the Charlotte Hornets who – oh, sorry. Did I cut you off?
Oh, yeah. I was just saying he probably wants to go back to Utah.
There are a lot of people in Utah who believe that he's coming back. A lot.
How many, Grubb?
A lot. I mean, I did a podcast with some folks from Utah, and they said that there are consistent rumors that Favors has been reaching back to the Jazz front office about.
Right, Favors has. That. But does it make any sense for a team that,
not
you know,
for Utah.
Has Rudy Gobert?
Not
it doesn't
Utah.
Make any sense to me personally. In the playoffs, we've seen Rudy Gobert unplayable at times, but then you're going to go ahead and go out of your way to bring Favors back? I don't see it. It doesn't make
to
any
me,
sense.
It seems plus like Charlotte makes the most sense if he does go somewhere. Because Atlanta, he can't go there because Capella's there, even though he's from Georgia, you know. He ain't going to Atlanta. They need a center in Charlotte to at least give them something. Or Boston, actually, because Boston has no bigs. That's their biggest problem.
You don't like Enes Kanter?
I think Kanter and Daniel Theis are better.
But he can't defend.
He's terrible on defense.
Yeah, so, I mean, at least if you can put Favors on the floor with the guys that they have on the perimeter, that's Boston's problem is closing out possessions and getting defensive boards. Favors still did that at an insanely high rate, even though he wasn't his best this year.
And Detroit's another possible landing spot with the departure of Andre Drummond. Sliding him next to Blake Griffin could help anchor that defense. And they've got plenty of money to spend, so they're probably going to throw some money at Fred VanVleet if the Raptors aren't willing to match it. Anyway, we're getting off on a tangent.
Hey, real quick. I want to just...
Christian Wood.
I want to finish out that Drew Holiday discussion on whether they should maybe what they should do basically with him. And I was digging through some numbers and basically just looking at the differences between the Pelicans' wins and what happened differently in the losses since December 18th, right? Since when they became a much better team on paper and in our eyes. So guess who showed the most variance in terms of production and efficiency between wins and losses? Who vacillated the most? Who do you think? Drew Holiday. Yeah. In wins, 22.6 points per game, you know, a field goal percentage over 50, 3-point percentage over 40. In the losses, 14 losses, it dropped all the way down to 13.9 points per game, 38.9 field goal percentage and 24 3-point shooting percentage. Nobody else had any kind of noticeable drop in their production and losses except for Drew. So that just goes to show you, one, how much he affected, I feel like, the team. Because he's always, let's face it, if it's not B.I., it's basically Drew creating when they get in the half court. So they have a big reliance on him and his role. But too often, he wasn't able to come through. So I think that should factor in David Griffin's thinking. You know, I just wanted to make a point. I'm going to turn this into an article because I only came across it yesterday while watching, you know, whatever the hell we watched last night. But yeah, I just, that shocked me, you know, almost, you know, 9 points less per game and the shooting percentage is just woeful. And like I said, scored the same amount. Zion, JJ, you look at Lonzo, everybody actually performed better in the losses, but Drew, nope, he was the one that went straight down, you know, to God knows where.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was on Grubb's favorite podcast, the Top 5 podcast, and he asked me who I thought was the most important player and who's going to affect the bubble performance the most, and I said it was Drew Holiday, and it's either going to be for the good or for the worse because that's how it goes. Like, right. He swings how we do – his offensive performance swings how we are in games, and, you know, that's why I think if you keep him around, you have to have another – creator. It can't just be Ingram that you rely on, and you can't give it to Drew to rely on him because he's been, you know, so wildly inconsistent.
I would take it even a step further, Kevin. I would hope that Ingram and Zion are both ready to be your one and two every single time options because you can't leave it in Drew's hands, I feel like.
Yep.
That's what my viewpoint basically is, as you're just mentioning.
But I think, you know, like even like Zion isn't going to be a guy for a couple of years who can really create his own shot from anywhere. You know, you need another guy that's a three-level threat that can create for himself like Ingram is. So that's why, you know, you look at adding another sort of veteran point guard or another guy on the wing that has that ability to take that pressure off of Drew, or you move Drew for, you know, whatever, you know, a starting center and a shot creator, something like that, you know.
You guys remember the rumors before the last trade deadline? How great would it have been to have basically moved him for either Tyler Hero or Michael Porter Jr.? I mean, those guys have been incredible, especially here in the bubble, I feel like. Just wanted to throw that out there. I know that I think Griff or whatever the Pelicans, when they were doing their due diligence, shot high, but they, you know, struck out. They weren't able to land any of those really key young guys that they had targeted. So it's a shame because, like I said, now these young kids are looking amazing, and Drew probably would have been a better fit somewhere else. I don't know if that deal's going to be there anymore.
Were you saying something, Ryan?
Yeah, I still want to bring Drew back because then they'll go from one to zero defenders.
That's a fair point. Right. Ryan, go ahead and talk about not just your thoughts on Drew Holiday, but just in terms of before the season started, we were obviously very excited. We had a lot of young, promising players. From then until now, what is your outlook for this franchise long term, and is Drew a part of that?
I think you have to approach that this summer. If you can't get an extension, he probably has till the deadline. That's kind of the same with Lonzo, too, to be honest from me. But I'm still really high on this franchise because you have Ingram and Zion. That's your building blocks, but you have to get this coaching hire right if there's a coaching hire. But the rookies, you know, kind of fizzled out in excitement. you have to get vets on this team. Like, there's no question. Like, Grubb is 100% right about that.
No, and Grubb, go ahead. Oh, sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, no, that's it. I'm done.
Oh, sorry. Grubb, go ahead and talk further about that, because the Pelicans obviously have seven open spots right now if nobody gets dealt. J.J. Redick is heading into the final year of his two-year agreement. That's somebody who could potentially be on the move if he wants to play for a contender. But even if he stays, you've still got so many open spaces. How do the Pelicans manage to fill those with veterans when really all they have at their disposal is the mid-level exception?
Well, you can still... You let Darius go. You get rid of that contract. You let Etuan go. Because, again, I think you don't need to be duplicating any more 6'4 players. And Etuan, his value, I think, at this point is greater in moving him than keeping him, especially if you bring Didi over and you're hoping to give him minutes. You're hoping for N'Keal to get better. And, like, I absolutely agree they need a veteran point guard, too. And there are always inexpensive veteran backups. Options. The key is to set the culture. That's what next year is going to be about with the new coach, is setting a culture. And that means finding veterans who, again, are professionals, who are going to teach these guys that this is what you do when you come into the building. This is how you practice. This is what that commitment really means. And this is how you go from being a basketball player to a winner. Because all those things have to come from the top down. And the Pelicans can't overpromise and underdeliver next year. If you're going to be realistic next year and say, yeah, we've got these great stars, but we're doing this. We're filling this out. I'll live with that. But if you and me again next year, if we're going through this whole thing and you have not dealt with those basic issues to at least make yourself competitive defensively, because I think if you have a competitive defensive team, your stars are still going to flourish. But if you don't address that, and if you don't get a mindset of being a more physical team, if you don't get a mindset of being a more mentally tough team, and that has to start from the top. It's going to come from Griffin. It's going to come from, if it's Alvin, if it's going to be the next coach. Those, to me, are the things. This team needs an identity and a philosophy, and they have not had that. Not under Monty, at the end of Byron Scott's tenure, you didn't know who this team was. And until they establish that, they're just going to be a middling franchise.
All right, let's go ahead and move big picture, because there still are a lot of games to be played. We've got the play-in tournament starting tomorrow with the Memphis Grizzlies and the Portland Trail Blazers. Much to my chagrin, I would have loved to see Phoenix have the opportunity to go toe-to-toe with Portland, but we still have all four rounds of the playoffs to look forward to. Kevin, what are you most excited to watch?
I'm excited to see that Portland go against the Lakers. I don't necessarily think they have a chance to beat them, but I think they have a chance to make that series fun, because the Lakers don't have anybody to guard their backcourt. And then while Portland's defense is terrible, they do have big men to put hands on Anthony Davis, which he hates. So it'll be interesting to watch that. And especially if Portland is able to steal a game or two, to see what kind of drama it creates in that Lakers locker room. I'm also interested in seeing how the Nets do, because, with all the player turnover and the losses that they had going into the bubble, they've played super hard, and they have a lot of young guys that I think are fun. And, I've always liked Caris LeVert a whole lot, and I like Jared Allen a lot, to see how they fare in the East and see if anybody can challenge the Bucks for that East spot, if Toronto or Boston can make it interesting over there. And also the Thunder. I mean, the Thunder are a very interesting team. I think that are dark horse to make it out of the West if the Lakers have some injury trouble, and if LA doesn't seem to – I mean, if the Clippers don't gel, they haven't really gelled that much in the bubble. Weird. They don't look dominant, though, we know that can be turned on in the playoffs. But those are things that I'm looking at, and I think the Thunder could be a sneak in there, at least get into the Western Conference Finals, if not the Finals.
Ollie, go ahead and expand on that. Talk about which teams you're looking forward to watching, and who do you hope comes out of each conference?
Yeah, I should just give you grief because of the conversation last night, our DM chat, right, with Portland and Lakers. But no, I don't think there's going to be much to see there. I do think that Portland's going to give them a run in at least a couple of the games, because they have been playing for meaningful minutes in every single game just to get into the play-in tournament, hopefully the playoffs. As for the Lakers, they haven't looked good. And they look more just LeBron James and AD and, hey, there's the rest of the guys kind of team, to where You know, I'm worried about their chances against a better team, right, as they advance. I don't foresee them making it to the finals. I mean, I'll be honest with you. But as far as the first round matchups, man, I don't think there's a better one in the West than let me see. Let me bring it up real quick because I don't know them off the top of my head. Who's OKC playing, guys? Do you know off the top of your head? I'm trying to see.
The Rockets. The Rockets.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, that's the one. I feel like the Thunder can really honestly shock people because they have been one of the best, if not the best team in clutch time this year. And the team with Chris Paul and a bunch of, you know, feisty young fighters on that squad, and you've got Steven Adams you can trust down low, I think they're a formidable challenge. You know, and if they're knocking down their three, okay, and you've got to think with Gallinari out there, they will. And the Rockets, you know, this whole thing with Russell Westbrook, I mean – what is it? He's going to miss at least part of the first round now for sure. So they're in trouble. I don't like their chances at all. And people like to talk about Dallas and Denver. While Denver has suddenly looked better because of Michael Porter, I still think OKC is going to be that Cinderella team to watch.
Ryan, go ahead.
Also with that Denver Rockets series, they're staying in the same hotel. So that can provide some interesting stuff off the court as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed that Twitter thread of Jaylen Brown and Donovan Mitchell where it appeared as if Donovan Mitchell had been stalking Jaylen Brown for the entirety of their stay in the bubble. And it's really cool. This is a unique time like any other in that all these teams can sort of mingle. They're all hanging out at the same spots. Ryan, go ahead and expand on this. Obviously, I want the Lakers to fail as spectacularly as possible. And they've been kind of flummoxing lately. They've been struggling. They haven't looked offensively the way they did during the regular season. What are some other storylines that you're really excited to highlight?
I just want to see Luka in the playoffs. Like, that's basically what I'm looking forward to. And Milwaukee, I want them to win the championship. I haven't been shy about that.
Yeah,
I'm think with you. I'm all for that.
I think it's unfortunate that Luka is drawing the Clippers in the first round. I was really hoping they could move up to the sixth spot, and the Mavericks and the Nuggets would have been a much more compelling watch, in my opinion. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, Jazz Nuggets is boring to me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't want Luka out in the first round. I would love to see him advance to the second round, but I would be shocked if that happened in this scenario. Grubb, go ahead and finish this out for us. Some storylines. We talked about the Nets, the Lakers, Luka, the Thunder, Rockets. Is there anything we haven't covered that's really going to be an exciting storyline?
I mean, I think you have to just see what the Blazers are capable of. I continue to think that they're the dark horse in all of this. I think the Lakers is a very favorable matchup for them. I think Anthony Davis has never been a playoff favorite before in his life, and that pressure is going to be different. And LeBron James is starting to look a little bit of his 36. The Lakers aren't making shots. I think you could very well see the Clippers and the Blazers in the Western Conference Finals, and I would that wouldn't shock me at all. I think and in the East, I would love for this to be the coronation of Giannis at this age, because he's proven to be one of those players that everybody says that they want on their team. The guy who does the work in the offseason, who is utterly dedicated to his craft, doesn't want to share his secrets. He doesn't want to share his workouts with anybody other than his brothers. And he comes back every year better and more determined to win. And I think that's the kind of new player as the league starts to transition into whatever era is next. Those are the guys who you want to see lead it.
All right, you guys, we're getting around an hour mark, so we'll go ahead and finish up and get some last thoughts. Obviously, we've got Ollie Costell, Kevin Berrios, David Grubb, and Ryan Hebert with us. We'll start with Ollie. I'm reading some comments in the chat thread about guys you don't want to hire, but just unwind for a moment. The Pelicans are scheduled to fly home today. J.J. Redick said he's going to be on the beach by tomorrow. Heading forth into the offseason, what are your plans, Ollie Costell?
I haven't had a chance to really think about it, but I mean, we're still in the middle of a pandemic, so how many plans can we have? And Preston, I love that you wanted for all of us to take a trip now to Cancun since we didn't do Las Vegas. What's that about? Let's put you on the spot. What are your plans?
I mean, I'll be honest and just get real with you guys for a second. I know we've all had our share of struggles, and I'll just say that over the a lot's happened over the past 5 months, and just unwinding with your friends is something that's been desperately needed for me. It's been really hard to be quarantined with my wife and my newborn and my mother-in-law I won't bore you guys with all the detail, but so many health issues happening throughout my family. Of course, there's the financial uncertainty and just the inability to spend time with people that you care about and just kind of unwind and vent
and just give each other a hard time. That's something that's been really difficult for me personally to go without. But I know there's so many things affecting so many people. I'm not trying to argue that, you know, anything I'm experiencing is any more difficult than anybody else. But just the idea of I truly look forward to that Vegas trip every single year. It's something I have in my calendar. And there's so few times in my life because of how hard we all work that I have the opportunity to really highlight a trip like that and really have something to look forward to like that. So losing that was something that was really hard for me. And I'm sure it has been for others. But again, don't want to make this a pity party. I just want to say how much I value those kind of instances to share time with my friends and to talk basketball and to goof off and to go see Ant-Man and Wasp and that sort of thing. So I would love to come up with something like that, but I know that times dictate hard choices right now. Now that I've gone on my soapbox, Kevin, what about you, man?
123 LAWorks.net. That's where I'll be filling out unemployment information still, because I still have not been contacted by my employer, even though they've been open for like 3 weekends now. Doing that and drawing birds and, you know, trying to maybe make that more of a full-time thing. Like, even once we go back to work, maybe cut down my days again to where I used to do it, where it's like 3 days a week and just focus the rest of the time on making stuff. Because that's been really rewarding, whether it's designing albums or just drawing, and being able to eat off of that has been really nice, to not go and hurt my back and my ribs being out of place all the time, and, you know, dealing with people yelling at me over bacon bits or no bacon bits, or that the bacon bits are fake or whatever, you know, all these things that I really don't care about. And now having to deal with people that probably don't want to wear a mask or follow guidelines and care about our safety and all of those things, which seem like a total nightmare. So yeah, that's what I'm planning on doing. You know, finding a new way to once again have a revenue stream that is fun and rewarding, instead of something that just makes me a lot of money and doesn't necessarily make me happy. It gave me some freedom, but it also has a lot of drawbacks to it. So now that passions are being more monetized, it's been a very good thing for me.
And Grubb, if you wouldn't mind expanding on this, I know you're in a position where you have a beautiful young daughter who's got to go back to school, and a lot of that's got to be done virtually now. And that's a whole new world, a whole new spectrum that you're and your wife are going to have to navigate. What has that been like for you?
It's hard right now. You know, we're trying to create a schedule that we can all know and understand and learn, but it's difficult to create a routine for a kid. You know what I mean? Just they're still kids, and it's and then I'm trying to do what I do, and, you know, put together 5, sometimes 6 podcasts a week and continue to do things. So it's difficult, but I mean, it's necessary and what we have to do. So we'll figure it out. I sympathize with all those parents out there who are doing this, and especially the ones who have kids in different grade levels and all those types of things. It's not going to be easy, but I don't feel safe sending my kid to school, and my kid doesn't feel safe going there.
I think that's totally fair, given the climate that we're living in right now. Ryan, I don't know a whole lot about you, man. Go ahead and take the floor. What have you been doing the last 5 months, and what are you looking forward to as the numbers? I just spoke to my father last night. He said the numbers in New Orleans are super low. I don't know where they are in other realms of the country. Obviously, things are difficult in Florida, but how are things for you right now?
I live in Lafayette, and they are not good here. I'm doing nothing. I'm going to grad school because I'm doing nothing starting Monday.
Congrats.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, that was out your way. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I mean, it was freaking early in the morning, but I was doing it.
Yeah, you should have hit me up, man. I'll see y'all after there's a vaccine. And, I'm also doing virtual learning with my daughter, who has no attention span, so I'm not looking forward to it.
All right. Well, we do thank you guys for spending your year with us. Obviously, we're about to finish our first year with the Armchair Media Network. So big shout out to Andrew Stevens, who I know is listening to this. It's been our pleasure to work with you guys, but mostly to all you guys for listening. Thanks for listening to us just like banter and shoot the shit and pretend to know stuff about basketball. It's really a thrill to interact with you guys. We're getting more and more questions every podcast. So thank you guys for all chiming in and being a part of this podcast with us. You can always help us out. We don't need money or anything. You know, just spread the word, go on iTunes, give us a rating, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found. And of course, do the same for David Grubb. You can find him at Hard in the Paint and do the same for him. And we're really excited to continue to bring you guys content as we get more news. We'll have more podcasts. We'll have more articles. Ollie's going to continue to write. I'm going to continue to write. David's going to continue to write. And Kevin is working on something with Mr. Christopher B. Connor that hopefully will be unveiled soon. I'm really excited to read that. But for now, thank you guys for listening. Let's dance. Let's go Pels. Thank you for listening to The Bird Calls on the Armchair All-American Network. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes, retweet, share with your friends, and most importantly, subscribe today. Black lives matter, and we're continuing to do our part here at The Bird Calls. That's why we've created the Armchair All-American Scholarship. Thanks to contributions from Armchair, myself, Music is My Refuge, R. Anders 36, Andrew Juge, Ralph Malbro, and many more, Armchair Media will be issuing four $500 scholarships per semester to aspiring Black creatives. The criteria is African-American, under 21, and in a creative field. To apply, send something you've created, whether photography, art, music, anything, to scholarship@armchairallamericans.com. We can't wait to see your application.